Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. As my channel grows and expands and I'm doing movie reviews now and my podcast and whatnot, which I hope you guys are taking a look at, I'm putting all this out for entertainment and education purposes. And I know I don't necessarily crave agreement. Everybody doesn't necessarily have to agree with everything that I say, but I still hope that you'll give me a chance to explain myself and talk about things. And maybe we don't end up agreeing on them, but I still think that it's a good thing to throw ideas and facts and opinions out there, and some of them stick and some of them don't. So anyway, just throwing that out there. We have some great questions this week, so let's go ahead and get right to it. Ross Geringer, what do you make of the current beef between Tony Ortega / The Underground Bunker and Mark Rathbun? The way I see it as an objective observer is that Tony Ortega is simply acting as a journalist, reporting the facts of the current developments in the Rathbun lawsuit against the church, and attempting to fill the vacuum / lack of firsthand information from the Rathbuns by consulting Texas lawyer, who seems to be a highly knowledgeable observer of the proceedings. Mark Rathbun seems to have really thin skin, surprisingly so given his background and personality, and has taken offense to pretty much anything Tony has reported or the commenters on The Underground Bunker have commented on. Granted, some of the comments that Mark Rathbun has recently reposted on his blog from The Underground Bunker are pretty inflammatory toward the Rathbuns, but still, it's internet commenting. You pretty much have to take everything said with a huge grain of salt. I'm more surprised by the fact that the Rathbuns seem to think that Tony Ortega is slandering them, which I have seen zero evidence of. It's also interesting to note that Tony has yet to comment on the fact the beef exists. Probably he doesn't want to make himself the story as a journalist. What is your take on the whole thing? I thought the Scientology watcher / ex-Scientology community was pretty unified, but maybe not. You know, I could practically make an entire video about this subject, actually the subject of the Rathbuns and their case against the Church of Scientology. I could make another whole video about the conflict going on between Tony Ortega and Mark Rathbun, which is, as far as I can tell, being generated by Mark Rathbun. And I could make a whole nother video about the subject of the ex-Scientology community and how ununified it actually is, and how unfortunate I think that that is, because, there's a lot of Scientology survivors out there. People got into Scientology for all different kinds of reasons. They come out of Scientology for all different kinds of reasons. And people go into Scientology in all kinds of different mental states. They come out of Scientology in all different kinds of mental states, generally worse than when they came in, to one degree or another. And don't misconstrue anything I'm saying as, you know, I'm calling anybody crazy or any kind of extreme nonsense, because that's not just the words that are coming out of my mouth, okay? There's no labeling going on here. I'm simply making observations about the fact that Scientology screws people up. And sometimes people were a bit screwed up, you know, before they got in, and they got more screwed up coming out. And sometimes people were all right when they got in, and they're screwed up when they get out. You know, there's a recovery process. We talk about it as recovery for a reason, because that's what it is. You know, you have people, especially ex-Sea Org members, suffer from various shades of depression, PTSD, other mental and psychological issues. There's trauma connected with it, and it's so easy on the part of many people, not just Scientologists, to say there's no such thing as mental trauma or mental illness or PTSD and things like this, and they just fluff it off. And I really don't know where they get off doing that, because it's very real. As somebody who's lived through it, I can tell you that it's very real. Now I comment on all that because I have to say that sometimes the damage that gets done by Scientology can be rather intense. And I've seen people come out of Scientology, and I'm not specifying anybody here specifically right now. I've seen some people come out of Scientology maintaining or holding on to some of what they learned or some of the ways that they operated in Scientology. And that is, it takes a long time to get past some of that, right? If they're ever going to. And I've seen this on Facebook. I noticed this when I came out of Scientology right away. I noticed that there were people who were very punchy, very, you know, wanted to fight. And if you didn't agree with, you know, the fact that, you know, like for example, if you didn't agree that L. Ron Hubbard was a total charlatan and a fake, then you were just an idiot. And they didn't spare no mercy in giving it to you in like that. Like it was their way or, you know, the highway sort of thing as far as they were concerned and their attitudes about Scientology. Now, when I first got out, that wasn't where my head was at. So I had to, you know, I had to get there. And so I found that kind of abrupt and rude. And I was kind of like, well, gee, aren't we all on the same side? And it was like, yeah, no, not so much. I'm not going to comment on the rightness or wrongness or goodness or badness of the Rathbuns or Tony Ortega. I've called them both friends or been friendly with both of them since I've gotten out of Scientology, and I still consider myself an ally to both of them. I don't have anything against the Rathbuns, personally or otherwise, and I don't have anything against Tony Ortega, personally or otherwise. Tony's great because he and I work together to the degree that when I have new video content, I post it on his blog first because he has an audience that it is distributed to, and it just seems like a smart thing for me to do. I've watched the Rathbun case against the Church of Scientology with keen interest and a lot of hope, and that hope was sort of dashed against the rocks when Monique and Mark Rathbun fired their lawyers and then quit the case. So the case is all but quit now, as far as I can tell. You know, we'll see if there's a final thing that they need to file or something like that, but it doesn't look to me like they're continuing with their lawsuit. But I'm reserving any final statements about the subject because I don't know enough about what's going on behind the scenes to comment intelligently about whether Mark and Monique Rathbun are justified in having fired their lawyers and doing what they're doing and dropping what it appears to be dropping the case. It appears to me, I should say, I don't know for sure, but it appears to me from the way Tony's been reporting on it that there's some frustration on his part in that the Rathbuns haven't said anything in explanation of why, you know, what's happening is happening. I've certainly felt some degree of frustration about that, but I also understand that it's from what I have seen Mark post, that it looks like he's got some kind of constraints on what he can or can't say. Now, recently, this is conflated into this whole attack with Marty, Mark Rathbun, posting very, you know, incendiary and inflammatory sort of things about Tony Ortega and Tony Ortega's commenters. He has a regular group of commenters who, you know, kind of just spend a lot of time, you know, of their day commenting on Tony's blog. I don't have a stake in that one way or the other. And I just, when I see critics fighting one another, ex-Scientologists fighting one another, I just shake my head and just think, you know, what a shame. Because as far as I'm concerned, we all have a common enemy, which is the Church of Scientology. And by enemy, I mean an opponent, a foe, a group, an organized group who are certainly opposed to us and have certainly done a number of things that show that they are opposed to their own goals and purposes. The Church of Scientology, as I've laid out very clearly in a number of videos, is not at all about doing what they say they're doing. So you have this entity, you know, and that entity should be fought against because it's not, they're not a good bunch of guys. over there in the Office of Special Affairs and in the senior HCO of the Church of Scientology, they ruin people's lives. That's what they do. And Scientology as a whole isn't doing what it says it's doing, right? Because it's not bringing human rights, it's not bringing personal spiritual immortality and all that. So I think that's the target of, you know, the anger, resentment, frustration, hostility. You know, I think all that should be focused in that direction. And unfortunately, in this little ex-community, the world of ex-Scientologists, it's not always that way. You know, I guess I go a little Rodney King on it, you know, like, hey, can't we all just get along, you know, knowing that we can't. And so it is what it is. And so we have to just kind of do what we're going to do, have the friends and allies we're going to have, and move the ball down the road to whatever degree we can. Jennifer Isaacs, what do you think of philosophy? Also, what do you think of Stefan Molyneux? Some say Molly is a cult leader. How many cults and cult leaders are there actually? Well, it's funny. I've been putting some attention on Stefan Molyneux recently. I hope I'm saying his name right. And some others as well, some other YouTubers I've been watching and doing some research and stuff on these guys. And somebody else has also asked me about Stefan and or commented on what a great critical thinker he is. I don't support him in any way. And the reason why I don't is because he pretends to be a philosopher and he pretends to be a critical thinker. But I do see a lot of cult leader behavior in what he's doing. Even in the way that he talks, if you watch his videos there, he has got an odd rhythm to his manner of speaking. And there's a lot of pauses and whatnot put into it. And if you go earlier in his work, it's even more obvious and apparent that he's doing that. I, you know, tend to have my alert up for people who engage in cult leader behavior. I'm pretty educated on that subject now, so I think I know what I'm looking at when I see it, and I see that in him. I don't agree with his philosophy either, or his economics theory, or his social theories. There are some things that he talks about that I do agree with. I mean, nobody's 100% wrong, and we do share some common views, but when I see him posting videos with Alex Jones talking about the global elite, well, you know, you know my thoughts on conspiracy theories of that level of the Illuminati and that sort of thing. And when I see him talking about defooing, if I have that term right, and if you don't know, defooing is his recommendation for disconnection, for shunning. He recommends very, very strongly in one of his earlier videos to defoo, which is to get rid of these people in your life who he says want to see you shot simply because, you know, you guys have a disagreement on something. And he goes to this extreme view okay, we'll get them out of your life, whether this is family, friends, wife, children, right? And I'm sorry, but, you know, I've been there, done that. And I've, you know, when somebody's pushing that agenda, they're not going to have me on board because I'm a very strong advocate for freedom of speech, and I'm not going to get in the way of anybody, you know, saying what they want or thinking what they want. We might not necessarily agree, and if we disagree strongly enough that I don't like that person, then I might not choose to have them around in my life, but I'm not going to disconnect from somebody or shun them out of my life because Stefan Molyneux tells me to, okay? And this defooing thing that he was talking about, I mean, that was just for the birds. I'm not at all interested. So, you know, as far as how many cults and cult leaders, I quote stuff, Steve Hassan on this. Steve Hassan has been doing anti-cult work since the 70s or early 80s. And he says there's about 5,000 destructive cults out there. I've never seen a list, so I can't say for sure. But I'll take him at his word because I trust Steve. I know Steve, and I think he knows what he's talking about. So that's where I got that information from. Continuum ad infinitum, continuum. Chris, I admire you for your hard work on highlighting the value of critical thinking and applying skepticism to various claims. But it seems to me you have a mental block on applying these aspects to religion. You say you believe Scientology to be a fraud, but according to the special conditions you give to other religious beliefs, you can't know that for certain, and you can't test this claims. In critical Q&A number 9, you said you don't believe in a conspiracy the CIA controls Miscavige because there's no evidence to believe that, but you reject that argument when others have made it about religion. It seems to me that your reasoning is as follows. If the religion is sufficiently old enough or accepted widely enough, then the claims it makes are unfalsifiable. Is this a fair assessment of your view on the subject, and how do you determine the veracity of the claims made by the traditional churches? Do you think the original founders of these religions thought its claims were just a bit of metaphor, as you have claimed previously? All right, well, we have the differences here that I'll talk about in regards to organized religion versus religious belief. I'm not down with organized religion. I don't like organized religion. I think that it tends to push people in the wrong directions, and by wrong directions, I mean away from freedom of thought, freedom of speech, freedom of belief. I think that organized religion enforces things on people, and I definitely strongly disagree with heavy-duty religious indoctrination of the young. I think that is absolutely a horrible thing to do. Because I think we wait to teach people philosophy until maybe, high school or college. I think we should do the same with religion, because then you have a mind that is developed enough that it can start judging things on its own merits and based on the person's own feelings and thoughts and beliefs versus what has to be called indoctrination, right, of children before they have judgment or have developed judgment, really, right? I think enforcing beliefs in God or Satan or Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or Thor on a five-year-old is an awful thing to do to that kid. That's what I think. Now, I'm not saying to make it illegal. I'm saying that's what I think. Okay. When it comes to religious claims, I don't treat religious claims the same as I treat, scientific claims. Maybe I should, but I don't, because I think that there's a dividing line between the physical and metaphysical. And there's this metaphysical literally meaning, beyond the physical, right? In other words, we can't know, we can't prove or disprove whether a God, a higher power, a supernatural existence is real or not. There's no proof of it. There's no way that you can show that it does exist. There's no way you can show that it doesn't exist. It's unfalsifiable as a claim, okay? So my view about it really is, why are we even talking about it? I've taken on the label of an atheist. I'm also agnostic in that I know that I don't know, and I know that nobody else knows either. So why are we even talking about it, right? That's pretty much my view on the subject. An atheist might come up to me and say, well, nobody in Catholicism or Christianity can prove that God exists, so therefore he doesn't exist. Well, you don't know that. You have no idea whether there is or isn't a God. You've chosen to believe that there isn't, and that's fine. I got nothing on that. And I'm not down on a person for thinking that, but for such a person to say, well, that means there is no God. Well, I don't know how you can say that. All of this came from somewhere. And you go, well, Big Bang, good. There's always a prior cause. There's something prior because we have the, experience of time, right? And so there's always something going on before. And science hasn't answered those questions. It hasn't answered the Big Bang. It hasn't answered what's before the Big Bang, whether it's a continuous cycle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think you get my point, right? That it's unfalsifiable one way or the other, so why are we even talking about it? Okay, that's my view on those matters, and I've articulated it poorly and well in different places at different times, trying to get this across. And also, of course, my views over the last few years have developed and evolved and changed, where I now take the label atheist, and I didn't used to, because I still believe or hope that maybe there's something spiritual, but I don't at all believe in a Christian God, or that Jesus is my personal savior, or that he died for our sins. I don't believe in any religious dogma as presented by organized religion. And I look at a lot of that dogma as a control mechanism. And I see those mechanisms in place just like I do with destructive cults. So that's why I go, okay, organized religion, okay, put it over there. Rules, rituals, rites, trappings, you know, this kind of stuff. And I just go, no. But is there something? Maybe. Maybe there is. And you don't know, and I don't know, so why are we even talking about it? There you go. Justine S. Hi, Chris. I'm a huge fan of your YouTube channel and have watched quite a few of your videos. My question is, how come LRH wrote, communication is the key component of life itself, and that through communication, any problem could eventually be resolved if both parties keep trying, and yet he later wrote policies to punish or expel people who communicated their disagreements, upsets regarding Scientology. Sounds like he was a hypocrite, and that he basically wrote policies that were against his early principles. Please explain why you think LRH did this. Love everything you do regarding raising awareness of destructive cults. Please continue. Yeah, you nailed it here. And again, this was something I was actually going to do a whole video on at one point, because it is the basic hypocrisy of Hubbard and Scientology, that in the early and mid-1950s, in a book called Dianetics 55, which is where you quoted from, this is a book all about communication. And it was one of the first things it was the first book, I think, that I read in Scientology, because I did that big communications course when I first came in. And I had to, you know, really study that book pretty intensively. And I loved what Hubbard said about communication. I thought it was essential. You know, he calls communication the universal solvent. You know, it dissolves all things, because you can communicate and resolve so much. And so so the whole concept of which came later, of disconnection, the way Hubbard wrote it doesn't sound hypocritical. And it was really how it was practiced that became hypocritical. The way Hubbard wrote it is that disconnection is something you use as a last resort only in instances where the person you're disconnecting from is actively, physically causing you either spiritual or emotional trauma, psychological upset, or whatever, or is physically hurting you or damaging you by their presence in your life. And of course, there are such people. You know, if you had a sociopathic boss or an abusive husband or a cousin or something who did nothing but insult and belittle you every time they saw you, you'd be like, yeah, I don't really want that person around. They're just negative and they create a negative impression in my life, and I don't need that. And you don't need that, right? And so you just kick that person out of your life. And Scientology made that sort of a procedure or a method that's used in order, because, you know, if somebody, the theory is that Hubbard wrote, this is what he actually wrote, is that, you know, if you had such a person constantly invalidating you and what he called suppressing you, you know, pushing you down and always on your case and that sort of thing, it would get in the way of you trying to, you know, your counseling, you trying to become a better person. Here you are trying to become a better person through your counseling. You come to realize things, you're pretty happy about your life, and then you go home and you're getting beat or abused, or you're running into your, you know, this cousin every few days, right? And this sort of thing, and they're belittling you and telling you that Scientology's stupid and you're stupid and everything's stupid about you and you can't do anything right and all that. So that doesn't sound so hypocritical. What happened is that this tool called disconnection turned into, very rapidly, a political tool of control in Scientology. Now, whether Hubbard first intended for that to happen with it or not, I have no clue. Nobody else does either. but it did become that very quickly. And of course, we know that Hubbard was not on the up and up. And so it's not hard for me to, there's no stretch of my imagination to think that, you know, this was why he wrote this stuff in the first place and only put it in really nice terms. But what he really wanted to do was just have another mechanism to control people's lives. And so he, you know, this was used to disconnect new Scientologists from their parents or from their loved ones or whatever, because they were giving them a hard time and all that. Now, there was a point where disconnection got, you know, it came out in the late 60s. It got canceled, but maybe only in name only. However, I've been told by a couple people who were around back then that it wasn't just in name only, that it really did stop being done, that people were not disconnecting just like that with family and friends and whatnot who were against Scientology. They really were trying to deal with and handle them. But move forward to the early 1980s, and it comes back in with a bang, right? And that's, you know, that's Hubbard, that's Miscavige, and now this control mechanism is there, and it becomes a point of blackmail as well, where Scientologists are kept in Scientology, because if you leave, then of course you know we're gonna, you know, you're gonna get disconnected from everybody, and that becomes emotional blackmail, right? So that's sort of the progress of that and the hypocrisy of it, and I think that's why that happened. Doug Nichols, hey Chris, what are your thoughts on the angry gay Pope? Do you think he's a professional protester with nothing to do? Is he publishing videos that only show him harassing people? What about Mark Bunker? He's another one that hasn't been in the church but makes videos about the Church of Scientology. Okay, well, as I mentioned earlier, I like to just get along with everybody. The angry gay Pope is a guy that I met when I first, he was actually the guy who filmed the very first video that I ever made when I was coming out on Karen Delacarrière's channel. So I met him and worked with them, and he was a nice enough guy, you know, in real life. I disagree strongly with his methods. I don't think that what he does moves the ball down the road well as far as, you know, getting people who are in Scientology to wake up or come to their senses or see the error of their ways. I think he antagonizes people who are in Scientology, and I don't think that that is effective at all to get people out. I don't think catcalling them or yelling at them or making fun of them publicly or that sort of thing is a good, effective strategy. I support him in his efforts to do something rather than nothing, but I think the results of that work are going to be minimal, and so I'm criticizing the work, not the worker, okay? I like the guy. He's a great guy. And as far as Bunker goes, he's a person who was never a Scientologist, and he's done a lot of documentary work, interviewed a lot of people who were involved in Scientology, done protests, done a lot of filming of things, good guy, clearly has a good heart, and he also made a spectacularly good advice video for Anonymous back in 2008, which they took to heart. They call him Wise Bearded Man or something like that. Wise Beard Man. Anyway, that where he said to them, look, you know, antagonizing the Church of Scientology and, you know, and that sort of thing, inciting violence and all that is not the way to go. And they took his advice to heart, which was really smart on their part. That made their protest work 100 times more effective. So anyway, that's what I think about those two guys. And it's time for Flash Answers. Derek Evanson. Are Sea Org recruits told about the RPF before they sign a contract? If not, that's a fraudulent contract. Yeah, no, they're not told about the RPF. If they know about it, they might ask about it, and of course it'll come up, and then, you know, the recruiter won't deny it, but he's not going to sit there and brief them about, you know, the Scientology Sea Org reform camps, you know. No, that's not thought reform. No, they don't talk about that. But the contract that people sign to go into the Sea Org is ridiculous. They're signing away, you know, they're signing a billion-year contract. How How valid is that? Not very. Roger Wilco, do you think David Miscavige will ever face criminal charges, and with the continued bad press, is there a chance of a coup in the works to drive DM from control? Nope and nope. I don't think either of those things are happening. I think David Miscavige is going to grow old and die in the church, or criminal charges might eventually. I mean, I'm not a seer. I don't know for sure that it's never going to happen, but I don't see it happening right now, and I certainly don't see anybody in Scientology ousting him. Askari Navarro, hi Chris. I need to ask if you ever saw a video of an actor called Stephen Mango, who was once a member of Scientology. He released it in 2014 on his channel. Yeah, I actually met Steve Mango. I have seen his video. Good guy, long video, but very informative, and we're Facebook friends. Leo Taxel, does Scientology target homeless people around LA and Florida by enticing them with the promise of a place to sleep and stable meals via joining the Sea Org? No, the Scientology doesn't do that at all. The last people they want around are homeless people who they consider degraded beings, can't work, way more trouble than they're worth, and they don't want to have anything to do with them. Scientology is, there to make the able more able, not make the disabled, able through Scientology's charity. As I mentioned before, Scientology's not a charity, not by any stretch. And I think, though, I will comment that I think sometime in the 70s there was a recruiter or Sea Org recruiter in Los Angeles who was driving a bunch of homeless people into the church there to be in the Sea Org, and that just flopped. That just was like totally. I mean, we laughed about it. It was a rumor. I don't know if it ever really happened. It was just some story I heard. But he got in a lot of trouble, and they just every one of them didn't make it, and it was just awful. And that's that would probably be the case in reality. They would be taking a homeless person who's got mental issues or is down on his luck and doesn't know what to do with his life and that sort of thing, and throwing him into the Sea Org. Oh my God, that's just not a match made in heaven, let's put it that way. Okay, and so we come to the conclusion of another of our Q&A episodes. Thank you very much. Please leave any comments, feedback, questions, anything you got for me in the comments section below. I do see it all. And I've been keeping my queue up of all of your questions. Also, hey, you like my channel? Throw me some love. I've got a donate button. I've got a PayPal button on my page. And I've also got an ongoing Patreon campaign where if you want to support my work, this channel and my life is supported by you guys. And I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your support. And if you like what I'm doing and you want to support me, consider becoming part of my ongoing Patreon campaign, because that's what allows me to keep doing this work. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you next week.